KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Scientists and Alaska hunters have been counting bowhead whales passing by the northernmost American town, Utqiagvik, for the past 2 months. It's part of a once-in-a-decade effort to evaluate the health of the population up north and support subsistence in the area. So far, the numbers seem to be on the rise. KMBA's Alaska Desk reporter, Ayolna Naiden, has more.
When bowhead whales pass Utqiagvik on their way up north, it's a good time to count them. Every 10 years, scientists and local hunters team up to carry out the census for bowhead whales that migrate between the Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort Seas. Biologist John Sitta says the data helps ensure that the bowhead population is healthy. It's also used to set subsistence harvest limits in the years to come.
We do it for the whaling captains, and we do it in collaboration with them.
First, they build a perch on the sea ice, right on the edge with a stretch of an open water, or lead. Observers have been climbing the perch and counting the whales passing by since the beginning of April. The visual count is only the first step of the census. But so far, Sita says the final estimate might be around 20,000 whales or more.
There are a lot more whales out there now than what there used to be, and that we suspect the populations continue to grow, but we just don't know that for certain yet.
Sita says the bowheads might be thriving because the sea ice in the Arctic is declining. Whalers in the Arctic have been involved in the bowhead census since the early 70s. That's when the International Whaling Commission counted whales for the first time. Retired whale biologist Geoff Carroll co-led subsequent counts.
We're able to show that there's plenty of bowheads to support the subsistence hunt.
That initial count only included whales passing through the stretch of open water. But hunters knew that some animals traveled far from shore or under thick ice. Throughout the years, the census has included acoustic and aerial surveys that account for those whales. This year, the acoustic part of the count is also happening.
It turns out that bowhead whales really talk a lot.
The International Whaling Commission expects the final estimate in 2029. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naiden.
A state of emergency was declared this week on the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Reservation in South Dakota. It was issued by the tribe's president, Kathleen Woodenknife. The declaration states it's due to threats posed by widespread methamphetamine and illicit drug use, trafficking, and related gun violence, which poses risks to public safety, community health, and tribal welfare. The tribe seeking increased patrol and investigation from federal agencies, cooperation from the community in reporting crimes, and urgent action to address law enforcement gaps. According to the Office of the President, this follows previous declarations issued in 2019 and 2024. 12 bike riders from the Cherokee Nation left this week from Tahlequah, Oklahoma for Cherokee, North Carolina to participate in this year's Remember the Removal Ride. The cyclists will join riders from the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians for the ride, which officially begins next week. The ride spans about 950 miles along the northern route of the Trail of Tears in Georgia and ends in Tahlequah on June 21st. The ride honors Cherokee ancestors who were forced to march in the late 1830s. Cyclists will visit several Cherokee gravesites and historic landmarks along the way. Their journey will be posted on the Remember the Removal Bike Ride on Facebook. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
DT Track, your healthcare partner across Indian Country, supports this show. DT Track provides culturally competent nationwide healthcare staffing to IHS, tribal, and urban health facilities. More at dt-track.com. Support by the Arctic Encounter Symposium, North America's largest Arctic policy event at the Denaina Convention Center and Anchorage Museum, July 30th to August 1st in Anchorage, Alaska. Registration for this global conversation at arcticencounter.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
To think that families would be sent back, they might be forced to return to a very, very unsafe situation.
Senator Lisa Murkowski reiterates her support for Ukrainian refugees living in Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 29th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, engineers who keep Alaska's ferries running say they're critically underpaid and understaffed.
The number one thing that will fix the problem is money, right? It's the pay issue.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Matson, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at matson.com/Alaska.
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski is emphasizing her support for Alaska's Ukrainian refugees. That was her message to about a dozen Ukrainians during a meeting today in Delta Junction. In recent months, the Trump administration has suspended programs that support their stay in the U.S. and paths to employment. Trump also signaled this month that he'd like to deport hundreds of thousands of refugees. Murkowski says she wants to keep them here.
To think that that families would be sent back, they might be forced to return to a very, very unsafe situation is not where I think we want to be.
Delta Junction is home to about 150 Ukrainian refugees. Many joined the town's pre-existing Slavic community after Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022. Community members told the senator that they're anxious about whether or not they'll be returned to their war-torn homeland. Some families have bought land and have started to build their own homes in the community. Murkowski says she's hearing reports of immigration and customs enforcement officials seeking information about Alaska's Ukrainian community. She says she's sympathetic to the community's concerns and that Ukrainian refugees are strengthening Alaska's workforce and economy.
It's hard to find workers, and they have been exemplary in the work that they do. One is in construction. He's trying to build some homes, and he has great workers within the Ukrainian community and want to keep them.
The senator says she's worried about the direction the current administration is headed with refugees from Ukraine, as well as other people who have fled to the United States from conflict. But at this point in time, Murkowski said she does not know the future of the refugee resettlement programs that allow the families to stay. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan has been advocating to reopen the naval base on a remote Aleutian island for several years. His efforts are part of a larger push to strengthen Alaska's military system. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports that Sullivan's plans are gaining some traction at the federal level.
Sullivan joined President Donald Trump in the White House last week when the administration announced its Golden Dome missile defense system. It's aimed at protecting Americans from intensifying Chinese and Russian threats and growing arsenals. During the announcement, Sullivan told the president that he is working on a Golden Dome Act with other senators to help cement the federal government's efforts. He says Alaska's strategic location is a cornerstone of the nation's missile security network and will play a critical role in the defense system. Sullivan told KUCB in early May that Alaska needs a heavier military presence.
But particularly out in the very strategically located Aleutian Island chain.
Part of his plans include reopening a naval base on Adak Island, which is home to the westernmost city in the nation. Sullivan says he's been discussing the possibility of reopening the base nearly every day, and various U.S. military officials have endorsed the idea. He says he's pushing to reopen the base because of Russian and Chinese incursions in Alaska's airspace. The Department of Defense says China and Russia are working closely together to be recognized as an Arctic power. On top of that, climate change is increasing the chances of competition in the area. And in recent years, the U.S. military has intercepted several joint forces between the two foreign powers in the region. In 2023, the U.S. Navy dispatched warships to the Aleutians after the military encountered a joint patrol of nearly a dozen foreign military ships. Sullivan says the increased presence of U.S. naval ships, aircrafts, and defense mechanisms on ADAC could give local fishermen peace of mind as foreign military activity picks up.
And if you're a Russian or Chinese Navy and you think you're going to harass an Alaska fisherman, take a look at this destroyer or aircraft carrier.
He says leadership from the Native corporation that owns much of the land on the island has been supporting this for years. The population of ADAC is only about 50 people. Still, there is a lot of existing infrastructure from the former base, which closed in the late 90s.
And that used to be a critically important naval base. It was an air station. It was a submarine base. It was a surface warfare ship base. And it was also a huge, huge fuel depot for military aircraft and military ships.
Sullivan says he will be introducing his legislation soon with Senator Kevin Cramer, a Republican from North Dakota. Reporting for KUCB, I'm Maggie Nelson.
Many communities along Alaska's southern coast are dependent on state ferries to get around and to fuel their economies. But those ferries move thanks to teams of onboard engineers. Those engine room employees say they are critically understaffed and the only solution is more state funding or fewer sailings. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more.
Megan Nye doesn't always know when or if her work week will end. She's an engineer on the Alaska Marine Highway System Ferry Columbia. She's supposed to work 2-week shifts, but sometimes, more and more often, those 2 weeks will turn to 6.
But I love my job, but I don't want to be there all the time, and I want to have a schedule so I can plan my off time, and just the not knowing if I'm going to be able to go home.
Nye is what's called a second engineer. She works down in the Columbia's bowels, maintaining the ferry's 3 boilers, fuel, HVAC, refrigeration, basically every complicated, worrying thing. She and 5 other engineers work in split 12-hour shifts, so the engine room is manned 24 hours a day. If that metal box in the bottom of the ship isn't properly manned, then the ship doesn't sail. She says it's a safety thing. You know, there's a minimum number of staff to keep the vessel and its passengers safe.
That's our nightmare, is having to cancel a sailing.
Nye says there are 2 ways to become a ferry engineer. You can do 4 years at a maritime academy, or you can be what they call a hawse piper, basically apprenticing. And after 5 or so years at sea, you can study and take 5 tests to get your license. That's what she did. But that's more difficult now.
So we have a lot less people coming up the hawse pipe, because they have families, you know, the money, they can't just leave for that time.
She says that's because the regulations have gotten tighter, more classes, more costs. And staffing shortages aren't exclusive to below deck crew. About 3 years ago, 60% of the ferry system's jobs were vacant. They've been slowly closing that gap. But officials say the ferry system is still 10% short of the minimum number of masters and bridge crew. And the engineers union says they're short nearly 20% of that minimum. Josh Chevalier is the chief engineer on the Columbia. He says it's a problem for all ferry jobs, but because engineers are behind the scenes, they're often forgotten by the public and lawmakers.
When people are stressed out and unhappy, I have to balance like the needs of the vessel with, you know, the needs of people's lives.
Chevalier has worked in the ferry system for over 20 years. He says the problem with filling jobs started about a decade ago. Chevalier says the ferry's funding woes go back to a larger problem he sees in the state. He says the state's major population centers, like Anchorage, have a lot more sway in the legislature. He says for them, infrastructure like the ferries and the engineers down in their bellies are out of sight, out of mind.
Haul a tremendous amount of traffic that never stops in Southeast and drives up to South Central and stays in hotels and buys fuel and groceries, stays in Airbnbs. So it's a very valuable economic engine for the entire state, but I believe it's viewed as sort of welfare for Southeast.
The Union for Ferry System Engineers brokered their current agreement with the state back in 2022. That agreement governs everything from what engineers wear to when they can get off the ship. It expires next month. So the Engineers Union has been bargaining with the state. They recently reached a tentative new 3-year agreement. Union representatives said they couldn't comment on the terms of the new agreement until it's signed. But engineers like Nye say that agreement could essentially determine the ferry system's future.
I mean, the number one thing that will fix the problem is money, right? It's the pay issue. And so trying to attract people from the academies.
The state recently reached an agreement with a different, bigger union of state government employees. That agreement included more healthcare coverage and an 11% pay increase. Chevalier says that a hiring push for engineers is a race against time. 30% of the ferry system's engineers are approaching retirement age, and he says in 5 years, busted boilers or a faulty refrigerator could be a much bigger problem. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new reading curriculum in the Anchorage School District is showing promising results for young students.
We can look at data all day, but what I see is kids are psyched to actually be readers.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Go to dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn about road, airport, and facilities projects across the state. You can zoom in on projects in your community using the interactive map, view traffic impacts, download data, and look at construction photos that will update all season long. Visit dot.alaska.gov/construction to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Immigration officials detained an Anchorage man originally from Peru last week, according to his wife. 32-year-old Christian Ibanez Velasquez has been in jail ever since. Ibanez Velasquez's wife, Paula Jimenez, says she just wants to know he's safe.
I just want to know when my husband's going to get out, when he's going to be safe and sound at home, because I don't know how it's inside. I don't know if he's safe in there.
Jimenez says her husband had no criminal record but was caught entering the United States illegally in 2022. She says he had been in regular contact with ICE, first while in Chicago and then Alaska, where he moved in 2023 and the couple met. She says they got married in October and planned to apply to get citizenship for Ibanez Velasquez, but that proved to be expensive.
It was hard to be able to pay for everything for us and then start a process, so we just never got around to it, unfortunately, and then this happened and it just changed everything completely.
A spokesperson for ICE sent a written response to questions about the case, saying that ICE, quote, does not indiscriminately conduct enforcement actions on random people. The statement goes on to say that anyone found to be in the U.S. illegally is subject to detention and removal from the country if a court orders them to be deported. Activists were protesting Ibanez Velasquez's detention at a rally tonight in front of the Department of Homeland Security offices in downtown Anchorage. In southeast Alaska, heavy rains and flooding triggered a series of small landslides in Ketchikan yesterday that blocked roads and damaged a home. The most destructive slide came down just after 1 a.m. Wednesday off North Tongass Highway, taking out a large chunk of a homeowner's driveway. The slide then hit the first floor of another home in a car. Officials say the people in the damaged home were evacuated without injuries. Another slide blocked a road to a remote area north of town. The Ketchikan Borough says that slide trapped a logging crew, a construction crew, and a handful of employees of a local outdoor adventure tour company. State Transportation Department crews managed to clear a path through the slide zone after about 7 hours. The U.S. Forest Service is also reporting significant flooding in the Ward Lake campground area north of town. In the couple days before yesterday's slide, Ketchikan saw nearly 7 inches of rain during one of the wettest Mays on record in Alaska's first city. The town averages over 150 inches of rainfall a year. A landslide killed a man in Ketchikan in August. It was the fourth fatal landslide in southeast Alaska in the last decade. No injuries have been reported in any of yesterday's landslide or flood events. Searchers have located the remains of one of the two men missing after a skiff they were in sank near McCoryuk, according to Alaska State Troopers. Troopers say searchers found the body of 65-year-old Albert Williams Wednesday on the east side of Nunavik Island, about 20 miles from McCoryuk. The second man, 72-year-old Samuel Shavings, remains missing. Troopers say the search has been suspended after extensive search efforts by boat and air. Three men were traveling in the Ocean Pro skiff when it sank May 26th. One man was able to swim to shore. The local searchers who found Williams' remains planned to transport his body back to McCoryuk once ocean conditions allowed for safe passage, according to troopers. Volunteers this week recovered the remains of three people missing since their boat capsized in Kachemak Bay last summer. Officials called off the search for survivors shortly after the boat went down. But earlier this year, a group of divers, seafloor mappers, and underwater inspectors took matters into their own hands. KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara has more.
It had already been about 8 months since the boat sank that David Mastolier read an article from Alaska's news source. The story was about a barbecue in Texas held to raise money to send a team to Alaska to try and find the boat. Four members of the Maynard family from Texas had been on the private boat with friends when it capsized: 42-year-old David, 37-year-old Mary, 11-year-old Colton, and 8-year-old Brantley. The U.S. Coast Guard called off the search for the Maynards after about 24 hours. Mastolier is the president of Support Vessels of Alaska Incorporated, which helps companies make maps of the ocean floor. After reading the news story, he felt confident he could help find the wreckage and do it for free.
Seeing that they were trying to continue the search, then I knew we could help.
Mastolier says after getting the blessing from family members of the Maynards in Texas, his team set out to find the boat. Within about 2 weeks, he says they'd found it.
So I kind of did the research, found out the last numbers that they were known, and gave it to our boat captain, and he drove the boat right to those numbers, and they put their equipment down, and there it was.
Mastolier brought on Benthic Geoscience Incorporated to help find the boat. David Oliver is a geophysicist with the company and says they have experience working in Kachemak Bay and locating shipwrecks.
It just felt like the right thing to do. I don't know how to say it other than that.
They then set about verifying the ship they'd found was the one they were looking for. Joshua Hankin Foley is the general manager of Vision Subsea LLC. The company specializes in sending tethered robots to take high-quality pictures and videos of objects underwater. In this case, Hankin Foley says they were uniquely equipped to lend a hand.
We're looking at real-time, high-definition video from the surface at the subsea target. So yes, in this case, it was reading off the AK registration numbers on the vessel hull.
Once Hankin Foley's robot confirmed the boat was the one they were looking for, divers headed down. That's where Jeremy Lilly's team comes in. He's the founder and president of the volunteer-run Alaska Dive Search, Rescue, and Recovery Team. He says divers face tough conditions while ferrying between the wreckage and the surface, strong currents, and bad visibility. That means divers hand-over-handed it down 180 feet of rope to the ship, where they navigated mainly by touch and found the three sets of remains. Lily says they've already cleared the boat's main cabin, but plan to go back, because the search isn't over yet. The fourth member of the Maynard family is still missing. Last October, a Homer jury issued presumptive death certificates for all four members of the Maynard family. Everyone involved says they hope finding the boat and recovering the remains can help bring closure to the loved ones the family left behind. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years. If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
36 graduates of the Alaska Law Enforcement Training Academy received their badges last week in Sitka. They're called graduates of the 17-week program, but maybe survivors is more accurate. Academy Commander Lieutenant Grant Miller told the audience in the Sitka Performing Arts Center that almost as many candidates fail to make it to the stage as those who do.
The training here is not known for being easy. In fact, within the first 48 hours of this class, 13 recruits had decided this was not for them. Throughout the course of the academy, 21 recruits ultimately left due to attrition. For many of these men and women, making it through this academy is an accomplishment they will never forget.
Trooper cadets are a frequent sight in Sitka this time of year as they head out at 5:30 a.m. on their morning runs in bright yellow vests. Students accrue 1,000 hours of classroom time at the academy in roughly 70 fields of study. They learn cold water survival, they're sprayed with bear spray, and they're tasered. Like much professional education, the program is intended to make some of the difficult tasks of law enforcement feel routine. Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom explained how this works in her commencement remarks.
Let's be clear. We all know that you didn't choose an easy path, but what you did was you chose a noble one. You have chosen to step into situations that most people would run away from. You've trained for months, your mind and your body, so that you can step forward in a crisis and make the kind of calm, informed decisions that save lives and change lives. And while your training here has been intense, it is only the beginning. From here, you will be the steady hand in chaos, the voice of reason in conflict, and the symbol of protection and order in the most remote corners of our state.
Graduates of the Alaska Law Enforcement Training Academy do not exclusively become state troopers. Of the 36 members of this class, 3 are joining the Anchorage Airport Police and Fire Unit, 3 are joining the Juneau Police Department, 1 is joining the Kenai Police Department, 1 is joining the Soldotna Police Department, 1 is joining the Craig Police Department, and 4 are becoming village public safety officers across the state. In the Anchorage School District, a recently introduced curriculum for young students learning to read is making a major impact. It's a big deal in a state where students have historically scored low on standardized reading tests. But as Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky reports, implementing the new lessons is not without challenges.
Katrina Mulholland is teaching her kindergarten students at Denali Montessori Elementary School how to read.
Remember, you're going to put your tongue right behind the top of your teeth, your front teeth, and you're going to turn your voice on. Feel your mouth.
It's all about separating the letter sounds that make up a word.
I lost you, so
it's harder to make those sounds when you're missing teeth.
This lesson comes from the University of Florida Literacy Institute's Foundations Reading Curriculum, or as many people in the Anchorage School District call it, UFLY. Denali Montessori is among 25 mostly elementary schools in the district using UFLY. And after just a year and a half, teachers and school leaders say the results are incredible.
So this is the first year we used UFLY from the very beginning of the year to the very end of the year, and we can actually see student outcomes.
That's Shearston Thomas. She also teaches kindergarten at Denali Montessori. According to district data, about half of Denali kindergartners scored well above the benchmark on a mandatory literacy screener this spring, compared to just 36% before UFLY was adopted. District-wide, about 10% more kindergartners scored above the benchmark in 2025 than in 2023. It's a significant jump in a state where children have long performed poorly on standardized reading tests, a data point that lawmakers, including Governor Mike Dunleavy, often point to in school funding debates. But for Thomas, the success is about more than numbers. It's watching her students learn.
When it really comes down to it, we can look at data all day. But what I see is kids are psyched to actually be readers.
But Thomas and other district teachers and leaders highlight that while UFLY is working, it's not without major challenges. The district adopted the curriculum in part to comply with the Alaska Reads Act, which requires teachers to communicate with the parents of struggling readers and provide interventions for those students. These interventions happen during a 30-minute block at the start of school called What I Need, or WIN time. The problem? There's no money to help fund all the extra work. Dunleavy championed the Reads Act, which became law in 2022, but he vetoed the roughly $5 million last year meant to support its implementation in schools. Thomas says teachers need more resources for all the extra responsibilities.
I am happy to reach out to families to let them know their kids are making progress or are not making progress, but it's a lot of extra on the teachers with no plan or funding, and it's very concerning to me.
UFLY is very similar to other phonics-based reading lessons, but gets more specific. Students are taught the relationship between speech sounds, called phonemes, and the letter combinations used to make those sounds in writing, called graphemes. In the last dozen years, 40 states have passed laws that require schools to use curriculum, like UFLY, that are based on the science of reading. Denali Montessori principal Deanna Beck says the lessons are most effective in small groups. The legislature just increased state funding significantly for schools for the first time in about a decade, but class sizes have already ballooned after years of flat funding.
Having more money available to us, just in general, is a positive thing, because being able to do the smaller groups, give that really targeted intervention to students when they're struggling.
Beck says one of the reasons Denali has been so successful teaching the new curriculum is the buy-in from staff. She is trained to teach UFLY as well as the school's gym teacher. That means when teachers need a sub, students don't miss out on lessons.
The confidence of students who are reading and spelling has just skyrocketed.
In an email, district spokesperson MJ Tim says many schools are showing growth similar to Denali since starting the UFLY curriculum, but he says additional funding is needed for all the elements that make UFLY work. Summer programs for struggling readers, communicating with parents outside of school hours, planning and providing reading interventions for students. Students are currently on summer break, but in the fall, teachers will support a new group in learning to decode letter sounds and starting to read for the first time. They'll receive a check mark for each lesson they complete, something kids in Mulholland's kindergarten class love.
What is it?
A check mark!
Check mark! Go ahead and do the train.
Ooga checka! Ooga checka!
But educators still wonder if their efforts will be supported. As the district spokesman put it in his email, quote, "For this to be done well with a focus on what is best for students, it needs to be funded," end quote. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rocky.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Shelby Herbert in Delta Junction, Maggie Nelson in Unalaska, Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, Sage Smiley in Bethel, Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. We also had that story from Tim Rocky just now. He's our producer. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare.
Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
it's not me. I go. I'm not here.
Helicopter plane, flames are getting higher. memory. Love may still be alive somewhere, somewhere, where they're down and only dear, 100 steel towns away. Oh, the rhythm of my heart is beating like a drum, with the words I love you rolling off my tongue. No, never will I roam, for I know my place is home, where the ocean meets the sky. Darkness, light it up, light it up, light it up. I can still feel a touch of your thin blue jeans. Running down the alley, I got my eyes all over you, baby. Oh, baby. Love may still exist in another place. I'm just yanking back the handle, no expression on my face.
Make me over. I'm all I wanna be. A walking study in demonology. Hey, so glad you could make it. Yeah, now you really made it. Hey, so glad you could make it now. Oh, look at my.
My makeup, it's too late. every day a different version of burning away like a wild-eyed pursuit. Hey, better realize, my friend, blood in the air, now you can't take it away. Gotta live. If only for a second, I see it twinkling in your eye. Gotta try. Well, it's flesh and blood and camouflage into the wild, now something's gotta give. Just another act of sabotage, seen through the haze of my mind, right sedative.
Pessimistic in your mind.
just water. Please don't cry. It's just a prayer for the dying. I just don't know what's got into me. Been crossing that bridge with lessons I've learned.
Just don't know what's got into me.